This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. This is Women's History Month, and my next guest hopes her new book will shed light on contributions made by young women in this state. Patricia Major's book is Great Girls in Michigan History. Patricia, you've profiled 20 of these great girls, ranging from the well-known like singer Diana Ross to the lesser-known like Ella Mae Wilson of Kalamazoo, who helped inspire what we now know as Memorial Day. Was there a common theme among these 20?
I'm not sure there was a common theme because they're from all parts of the state, all different areas of expertise. But I would definitely say this, that these girls were, they did share some common personality traits. They were all precocious, you know, which is to say they were doing adult things at an early age. They were self-driven. And many of them had to overcome obstacles, whether it was physical or, an obstacle in terms of where they lived. So, you know, they shared some personality traits, but they were each very unique in their own activity and accomplishment.
And they all accomplished things before they were age 20.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's pretty special. Let's look at some of these great girls. I want you to tell us, if you would, about the girl from Grand Rapids, the dancer, who went on to become the First Lady of the United States, Betty Bloomer.
Mm-hmm. And I think she's actually on the cover. It's this adorable picture of her on the cover, which probably most people wouldn't recognize who she is there. But, you know, we know her, and even children know her as the First Lady.
Betty Ford.
And she obviously had some challenges in her later life when she founded the Betty Ford Treatment Center for Addictions. And she had breast cancer and became quite a model for that. And she was a big proponent of the Equal Rights Amendment. But before any of that occurred, she was a dancer and really wanted to make that her career. And she was, you know, precocious in that she was a good dancer at an early age, was able to found her own dance studio by the age of 15 in Grand Rapids. Where she taught little girls, but also their mothers. She would teach their mothers the latest dances of the era. And she was
quite the little entrepreneur, may we say. Yeah,
she was. And she was discovered, if you will, by Martha Graham, a modern dance pioneer, and was part of her troupe, not her top troupe, but one of her troupes. And she danced at Carnegie Hall, all before she met the to-be president, Gerald Ford. So she had this whole creative side to her that really wasn't evident so much later in her life, although she did have the opportunity to honor Martha Graham as an adult with a National Medal of the Arts.
Well, but it is interesting. She plowed ahead there with mm-hmm. her dance career. And then, as you say, when she was First Lady, she was very open about her breast cancer struggles. Mm-hmm. And I know I was actually working for the American Cancer Society at the time, and it was very helpful in making women think twice and, you know, get mammograms and follow up with detection. So mm-hmm. she really did. And then, as you say, very, very open about her substance abuse struggles. And mm-hmm. we still have the Betty Ford Center going strong. From the sports side, I'll tell you, I had no idea Serena Williams was born in Saginaw.
Mm-hmm. It was her mother's hometown, and her family was living there. Serena's actually the last of a group of five girls, I think, in the Williams family. And her parents were living there at the time she was born. She didn't stay too long. You know, the backstory that is often told of her relates to Compton, California, where she grew up on and played on some of the most rundown courts that were available. But she did well. Her dad was primarily her coach, hers and Venus's. And Serena started at the age of three playing, and by the age of 10, she was the number one player in her age group in the nation.
Quite amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Well, from the athletic side as well, I'll confess one of my absolute very favorite movies is Penny Marshall's A League of Their Own, starring mm-hmm. Tom Hanks and Gina Davis. And anyone who's seen it knows it's about the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And it turns out Michigan had a team and Marilyn Jenkins was a star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, Michigan had several teams, but the Grand Rapids team, which was called the Chicks, was a pretty prominent team in the league that was established on both sides of Lake Michigan.
And we should recap, in case someone hasn't seen League of Their Own, this was during World War II when mm-hmm. the guys were all overseas fighting.
Yeah, yeah. Many of the minor leaguers had left to fight in the war, and the baseball owners were afraid that the major leaguers were going to leave too, and they better do something to develop sort of an alternative form of entertainment. So they got the idea of recruiting young women and to see how well they would play with baseballs, not softballs, as women are limited to these days. And Marilyn's story is really touching because she had a very supportive father who loved to take her to watch baseball games. They would go to watch the Negro League games that were played in Grand Rapids. And he sort of pushed her when he found out they were going to develop this women's team in Grand Rapids. He pushed her to go and volunteer. You know, do they need something over there? And so she actually began as sort of a greenskeeper, you know, just trying to pick up around the stadium that they played at. And little by little, she got to know the young women, and they welcomed her and really treated her as a little sister, taught her some baseball skills. And by the time she was old enough to compete, she did try out for the team, and they accepted her.
What did she play?
Catcher.
No, just very much like the Gina Davis character in League of Their Own. You profile a very interesting young woman that I think most of our listeners may not have known of, Ella Mae Wilson of Kalamazoo from the Civil War era, and she helped inspire a holiday we all observe today.
Ella and her sister Josephine were the children of an army chaplain during the Civil War, and they were... They followed him. They were allowed to follow him as a family with their mother while he was stationed in the Virginia area. And, you know, they had some – they were not obviously billeted with the Army troops, and they were in communities. And they were surrounded by the deaths of these young soldiers, both Confederate and Union soldiers. And they actually went and started to place flowers on the graves of some of Confederate and Union soldiers. It didn't matter to them. They were just trying to honor the war dead. And it became known what they were doing. There were people in other communities who started to pick up the practice. And when they came back to Kalamazoo, which is where they had originated, the practice continued out east, became and really expanded up the eastern seaboard. And they were credited with being the founders or the people who established this practice that we now know as Memorial Day, but was then called Decoration Day.
I remember that it was Decoration Day. I'm talking with writer Patricia Major, whose book, Great Girls in Michigan History, looks at 20 women who, as young women before the age of 20, began to make their mark. You, in your research, figured out exactly which Michigan Rosie the Riveter was the model for the iconic We Can Do It poster, and that was Geraldine Hoff Doyle?
Yeah, she was working, actually, in Ann Arbor during the war years. She was too young to – she really wanted to enlist in one of the women's corps, but she was too young. So she was biding her time by working at American Brooch, which is out on Jackson Road. The building's still there. And a photographer came by and took pictures of some of the young women working in the factory. And, you know, as one can see in my book, she was an attractive young woman. And she really caught the eye of this person. And he had her posing in different ways. And she never knew what happened to those photographs. Years go by, and she sees her picture adapted into a poster in what is now the AARP magazine. And she thought, well, that's what happened. That's where my photo went. And so ever since then, it's, you know, it's been obvious that that was her connection to this We Can Do It poster that is now just an iconic image for not only what was happening during World War II, but for women's rights and the progress of women.
So that was some 40 years later when she actually saw that. She didn't realize. One might want to make a case that maybe she was owed a few, a little bit in royalties for all of that, but she certainly did made for a striking image. Yeah. You do profile some Michigan girls who went on to do big things in the entertainment industry, like Diana Ross. And I think her story coming out of the Brewster Projects in Detroit is pretty well known. But I wanted to talk a little about a woman who won a Tony. She won Emmys. She was an Oscar nominee. Julie Harris.
Yes, Julie is probably our most decorated actress from the Great Lakes State. And in terms of Tonys, she holds the honor of having won the most Tonys. And that's the award for
your
performances on stage.
Yeah.
And she grew up in Grosse Pointe Park, and she came from a wealthy family, which is unlike most of the other girls in this book. She had a very wealthy background, could have really just continued on to be a socialite, you know, married a wealthy man and lived in the Grosse Pointes. But she really had a driving desire, even as a child, to be a performer. And she loved to go to the movies and watch actresses and would act out the scenes when she got home. She read biographies of actresses. And by the time she was going to camps and she was performing in theater camps and going to performing in her high school plays and such. When she went off to college at Yale, she auditioned for a Broadway play and was given the part. And she even asked her professor, you know, should I take that part? And he said, what are you here for? To be an actress, go do it. So she did. So she had a role on Broadway before she left her teen years.
And, of course, went on to have a very, very long and honored career. And then there was a woman you profiled named Joan Leslie Caldwell. Mm-hmm. I wasn't familiar with her, but here she is. As she's right out of Highland Park, Michigan, and here she is acting and dancing opposite Fred Astaire in The Sky's the Limit, and she was 18 at the time.
And you wouldn't know it from that photograph. I mean, she looked older for her age, and that's, I'm sure, why she was cast in such big movies against such well-established male actors. But, yeah, in her first few years in Hollywood, she acted, you know, opposite Fred Astaire, obviously, Jimmy Cagney, Gary Cooper. You know, she was even in a movie with Humphrey Bogart, and that was just unheard of for somebody who was just kind of fresh in town, you know.
But she didn't go on to have a long career because she isn't one of those names that automatically jumps out. It was her choice?
It was her choice. She continued for some time into her 20s, and then she met and married a doctor out in the Los Angeles area, and she had twins. And she took time off to be with them and raise them. She did later come back and do TV performances and the occasional movie. But she made a conscious decision, you know, to set aside her movie career for her family. And I don't think regretted that.
Who would you say is your audience for Great Girls in Michigan History? Who did you write this for?
Well, my focus was on girls 8 to 12. And I think they'll get the most out of it. But I hope that boys will read it too. It's the thing that struck me as I researched about these girls was that they really didn't let obstacles stand in their way. Many of them had challenges in their home lives. A number of had lost parents, particularly fathers, and still moved on. And without someone prodding them, you know, they really were self-driven girls. So, but I think this book just shows that even young people can make an impact.
Patricia Major's book is Great Girls in Michigan History. And Patricia, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
To find out about events with Patricia Major around the state, just head to michiganradio.org.